However, out in the darkness, a single patch of light showed defiantly around a long, low structure without windows. The low structure turned out to be a really long tent of metallic cloth, marked with the familiar red crescent of the Sisters of Mercy. As on so many battlefields across the Empire, the tent was a hospital for all who needed it. The sisters took no sides. The factory complex had just enough space for a single hospital ward, officers only. The foot soldiers, security men, and mercenaries had to rely on the sisters' mercy. The officers believed this gave their men an extra incentive not to get wounded. It was a big tent, looking bigger all the time as Toby slogged through the snow toward it. He hadn't traveled far, but already his thighs were aching from forcing a way through the thick drifts and fighting the constantly changing winds. He finally lurched to a halt before the far end of the tent and found himself facing a very secure-looking steel door with a signposted bell. He hit the bell with his fist because he couldn't feel his fingers anymore, and a view screen lit up in the door, showing a sister's veiled head and shoulders. She didn't look at all pleased to see him. Toby reached inside his furs, pulled out his press pass, and held it up before the screen. The sister sniffed, and the view screen went blank. Toby and Flynn looked at each other uncertainly. They were both shivering uncontrollably, no longer warmed by their exertions. And then the door swung suddenly inward, spilling light and heat out into the night. Toby and Flynn hurried forward into the comforting glow, and the door slammed shut behind them. Toby pulled the scarf away from his mouth and took off his fur hat, his eyes watering as they adjusted to the new light and warmth. He and Flynn took turns beating the snow off each other, and then Toby turned and smiled ingratiatingly at the sister who'd let them in. It was always wise to be polite to a sister of mercy. They had long memories, and you never knew when you might end up needing their services. This particular sister looked to be in her late 20s, but already had deep lines around her mouth and eyes. Dealing with death and suffering on a daily basis with no end in sight will do that to you. She wore the usual unadorned white robes and wimple of a sister in the field, but her robes were spattered with new and old bloodstains. She was also big enough to stop an oncoming tank and had a glare that would have wilted anyone but a reporter. Flynn moved surreptitiously to stand behind Toby just in case, and Toby tried his ingratiating smile again.
"Hi there. We've come to see Mother Superior Beatrice. I'm Tobias Schreck, and this is my cameraman. We're expected."
The sister stepped forward, pulled open his furs, and frisked him with brisk efficiency. She did the same with Flynn, while Toby silently prayed his cameraman wouldn't giggle. Assured they weren't carrying any weapons, the sister stepped back and studied them both, her face set and unforgiving.
"She said you two were to be admitted, but you're not to tire her. This should be her rest period. She works all the hours God sends and then makes time to deal with the likes of you. I don't want her tired. Is that understood?"
"Of course, sister. We'll be in and out before you know it."
The sister eyed them dubiously and then turned and led them down the single narrow aisle in the middle of the long ward that made up most of the tent's interior. Toby and Flynn followed behind at a respectful distance. There were beds on either side of them, crammed together with no space for luxuries like visitors' chairs. They weren't the standard hospital beds of civilized worlds either, with built-in sensors and diagnostic equipment. These were flat cots with rough blankets and sometimes a pillow. The smell of blood and other more disturbing smells pushed their way past the thick, masking disinfectant. The patients were mostly quiet, drugged, Toby hoped, but some groaned or moaned or stirred restlessly on the narrow cots. One man with no legs was crying quietly, hopelessly. Flynn's camera covered everything. Many of the patients were missing limbs or half a face. Toby was sickened. You didn't expect to see injuries like these anymore. He made himself look away. He was here to cover this, all of it.
"Don't the wolf supply you with better equipment than this?"
Toby tried to keep the anger out of his voice so as not to upset the patients. The sister didn't look back or slow her pace.
"Huh. We're on our own here. Officially, the wolves are winning this nasty little war, so they can't be seen supplying Technos 3 with major hospital facilities and supplies. Word might start getting out of the real state of casualties and how badly the war is going. So they only supply us with the minimum necessary to cope with the low levels of wounded they're reporting. It's important to the wolves to give the impression that everything's fine here, and they're fully in charge of the situation. Bastards. I'd drown the lot of them if I had my way. And you can put that in your report if you wish.
I'm interested in everyone's views. I want to tell people the truth of what's happening here.
If you are, you're the first. Not that it'll make any difference. The wolves will censor anything embarrassing out of your reports before you're allowed to broadcast them.
Toby remained even more diplomatically silent. He expected to be censored. That went with the job and the territory. The trick was in which you managed to sneak past them. Halfway down the long tent, a small area was separated off by tall standing screens. Toby thought at first it was a toilet, and was somewhat surprised by the sister's clear respect and reverence as she tapped on one of the screens.
It's the press people. Do you still want to speak to them, or shall I kick them out?
There was a low, murmured answer from within, and the sister scowled as she turned back to Toby and Flynn.
30 minutes and not a second more. And if you tire her, I'll have your balls.
She pulled back one screen to make a doorway, and Toby and Flynn nodded respectfully to her and eased past her, much as one might a growling watchdog. They filed through the doorway, and the sister pulled the screen back into place behind them. The screened-off area turned out to be just big enough to hold a cot, a wash basin on a stand, and a small writing desk. Sitting before the desk was Mother Superior Beatrice, wrapped in a long silk housecoat with frayed hems and elbows worn dull. She looked pale and drawn, and her bright red hair had been cropped brutally short, but her eyes were warm, and her welcoming smile seemed genuine enough. Behind her, her black robes and starched wimple hung from a hat stand, looking almost like there was another person in the small space with them. Beatrice didn't get up, but offered Toby her hand. Her handshake was firm, but brief. She turned to Flynn, who leaned over her hand and kissed it. Beatrice's smile widened.
If you knew what I'd been doing with that hand just half an hour ago, you'd rush out of here to gargle with sulfuric acid. I'm glad to see you both. I wasn't sure you'd come. Everyone else I've asked didn't want to risk rocking the boat.
I'm not sure I do either. It depends on what you have to tell me. Is it okay if my cameraman records this conversation?
Of course. That's why I insisted on you both coming here. Sit on the bed. We don't have any more chairs to spare, and you fill too much space standing up.
She settled back in her chair by the desk, and Toby lowered himself cautiously into the cot. He wasn't sure it would bear his weight. It felt hard and unforgiving. Flynn stayed on his feet, moving quietly back and forth to sort out good angles for his camera. Toby ignored him. Flynn would take care of the technicalities. His province as reporter was the interview and what truth he could squeeze out of it. Mother Beatrice had a reputation for being outspoken, but that had always been in the pampered and protected court, far away from the blood and dying of the front line. She was supposed to have changed greatly after her experiences in a field hospital, but most of those stories were at least second-hand. And Toby wasn't sure he believed in saints anyway. He decided to start with something simple and clear-cut.
You seem very crowded here, Mother Beatrice. Surely this structure wasn't meant to accommodate so many people at one time.
Hell no. It was meant to serve a third as many patients, but that was worked out by civilized people in civilized places. And call me B, since I'm officially off duty. We're packed to the walls here because things have been going particularly badly for the wolves in the last few campaigns. The lines move back and forth on the map, but they are drawn in other people's blood. Some of our patients are rebels, of course. The Sisters of Mercy serve all sides impartially, whatever the pressures.
Toby raised an eyebrow.
Do the wolves know you're treating rebel wounded?
I haven't told them. Not after the way they reacted the first time I raised the matter. I keep meaning to bring them up to date, but somehow I never get around to it. I don't see that it's any of their business. They only supply me with the bare necessities, even for their own people. We're a long way out from civilization, and transport costs are obscenely high. So I just do my job, as I see best. We do what we can here. Patch people up and send them off. It's not unusual to see the same faces come back 2 or 3 times, bleeding from a different place each time. Rarely more than 3 times. Many can't take the shock of so much surgery. Others just give up. It's a hard war and a harsh world. We don't see many flesh wounds here. Supplies are running low. Blood plasma, anesthetics, most drugs. The Sisterhood sends what it can, but there's a lot of fighting going on across the Empire these days, and the Sisters' resources are spread very thin. Some days this isn't a hospital, just a butcher's shop.
How long has the armed struggle been going on here, B?
Generations. People have been born, lived their lives, and died here, knowing nothing but the war. Of course, it's escalated since the Wolves took over the factory. The upcoming ceremony has raised the stakes for both sides. Still, it was only the rising publicity that alerted us to what was happening here and persuaded the Sisterhood to send in a mission. If they knew what was really going on here, they'd send more help. I know they would. But the Wolves control all contact with the outside.
What kind of war are we talking about here, B?
Pretty basic. The struggle here's settled down into trench warfare, been stuck in the same pattern for decades. Both sides dig tunnels, but the planet's remaining wildlife lives down below, and it doesn't like competition. Fighting above ground is almost impossible for any length of time, due to the weather. It changes so unpredictably that shelling is impractical. Same for air cover. And when the wind blows, there's so much dirt and metal floating in the air that it disperses energy beams to nothing over anything other than point-blank range. So most of the fighting is hand-to-hand, steel against steel, boiling up out of their trenches to fight in the no-man's land between Wolf and Rebel positions. The front line surges back and forth all the time, but nothing really changes. The two sides are too equally balanced. Though the arrival of the Church troops should make a difference.
Jesuit commandos leading elite troops have cleared out resistance on many planets.
Technos III is different. The rebels here have been fighting for generation upon generation, for as far back as records go, learning and improving all the time. Hell, they've been breeding for warriors for centuries. And then there's the weather. You need to be superhuman just to survive here. And that's the state of war on Technos III, right in your face and bloody. The only reason we're not totally swamped with wounded is because most of them don't last long enough to reach here. They die of the heat, or the cold, the razor storms, or the blizzards. But there's always enough work coming in to keep us busy, even when we've run out of drugs and plasma. And we have to hold the patients down while the surgeons cut them apart and sew them up, hoping the shock won't kill them anyway.
Toby leaned forward a little, subtly interrupting her. She was starting to repeat herself, and he needed to keep her to the point. He was torn between getting as much good material as he could, and the knowledge that the longer he stayed here, the more likely it was that someone back at the complex would notice he and Flynn were missing, and put 2 and 2 together.
How many staff do you have here, B? How much help?
I have 2 surgeons and 5 sisters trained as nurses working under me. There was a 3rd surgeon, but he cracked under the pressure, and I had to send him away. He didn't want to go. Even cried when I put him on the transport. But he was too far gone, even for us. I'm still waiting for replacement. Technos III isn't very high on anyone's list of importance. It's just a name to most people. I only came here because I was desperate to get my hands dirty in some real work after the endless sniping and intrigues at court. If I'd known what I was letting myself in for, I'd probably have come anyway. I never was very good at looking away and pretending I didn't see anything. What medtech we have is top of the line, the best the Sisterhood could provide. But it was never meant to handle this many wounded. I live in fear of it breaking down. There's no one here who could repair it. The Wolves have their own med bay in the factory, everything you could dream of, up to and including a regenerator. One of the nurses there is sympathetic. I raid their drug supply from time to time when I'm really desperate, and she covers for me. God bless her. Can I offer either of you gentlemen a drink?
She reached under the writing table and brought out a bottle of murky-looking spirits and two glass specimen jars. She shrugged when Toby and Flynn politely declined and poured herself a large drink. Toby gestured urgently for Flynn to keep filming. B was the kind of subject you prayed for in a documentary. A real character, someone who knew everyone and everything, right there in the middle of things, but still able to stand back and see the big picture. It helped that she didn't look much like a nun, and the drinking was a nice touch. The viewers didn't like their saints to be too perfect. Her hand shook as she raised the glass jar to her mouth, and Toby felt suddenly, obscurely, ashamed. With all he'd seen and heard, none of it had touched him, the way it had obviously touched her. She cared, and he was just an unfeeling, recording eye. Just like Flynn's camera. He tried to tell himself he had to get the job done, but that didn't sound as convincing as it once had. He made himself concentrate on B as she lowered the almost empty jar.
God, this is awful stuff. But I couldn't work here without it. Two of the sisters pop amphetamines, and one of my surgeons has a serious drug habit. I don't say anything, as long as they can still work. We all need a little something to get us through the day. And the night. The nights are the worst. That's when most of our patients die. In the early hours of the morning, when the dawn seems farthest away. I don't know how much longer I can stand it here. It wears you down, having to fight for every life, even the simplest wounds. Nothing's simple here. Not even this tent. It's the strongest the Sisterhood could provide, but even it can't cope with the excesses of weather we have here. In the summer, it gets so oppressive you can hardly move. In the winter, I've seen the surgeons stop in mid-operation to warm their hands in the steaming guts they've just opened up. We've all changed here. I never really wanted to become a nun, you know. I fled to the Sisterhood for sanctuary, so I wouldn't have to marry Valentine Wolf. But I ended up at the mercy of the Wolves anyway. I never had much time for religion. I just used the Sisterhood as a power base, like many before me. And I only came here because I was bored. But here in hell, I found religion after all. In the face of so much evil, you have to believe in God. It's the only thing that gives you the strength to go on.
She rose suddenly to her feet, catching Toby and Flynn by surprise. She emptied the jar of the last of the drink and put it down on the desk.
I've said enough. I'll take you around the beds, so you can see the kind of wounds we're dealing with. Some of the patients might even talk to you, though you'll have to edit out the obscenities.
She led them out of her private area and back down the long aisle between the beds. Flynn filmed everything, sweeping his camera back and forth. The tent was still eerily quiet, and no one wanted to talk to them. Toby supposed they didn't have the strength to waste on moans of pain or complaints. The other sisters were moving quietly from bed to bed, checking bandages and temperatures, or if there was nothing else they could do, just laying a cool, comforting hand on a fevered brow. Toby kept quiet, too. The last thing this needed was a commentary, and he didn't have any more questions. The answers were too obvious. To his surprise, he felt mostly angry. This kind of thing shouldn't be happening, not in this day and age. He'd covered up enough things himself in the past, as Gregor's PR flack, but never anything like this. A family's troops dying to hide a family's shame. He kept telling himself not to get involved, that this was just a good story, and was surprised to find how close to angry, frustrated tears he was.
Film as much as you like. The odds are no one will ever see it. I keep trying to get reports out, and the wolves keep blocking me. They can't afford to admit they're losing the battle here. The Empress might take Technos 3 and the factory away from them.
Some news did get out, from transport crews and the like. Of the saint of Technos 3, who threw aside her aristocracy to tend the wounded and the dying. That's what brought us here.
I'm no saint. Anyone would do what I do if they could see what I've seen.
We'll get the report out somehow. Even if I have to smuggle a tape out by cramming the cans up my backside.
Bea smiled suddenly.
Well, I always said the wolves were a pain in the ass.
Jack Random, Ruby Journey, and Alexander Storm followed their guides down through a maze of tunnels, away from the open trenches and the fury of the rising blizzard. The tunnels sloped sharply downward, their walls revealing the many layers of compacted trash and metal that made up the history of the planet's surface. The air was warmer underground, but the three newcomers were still shivering. Light came from metal lanterns hanging from the low ceiling, a pale yellow glow that was hard on their unaccustomed eyes. People bustled around them as they descended deeper, always in too much of a hurry to do more than stare or very occasionally nod a greeting. They were all heavily muscled, with little covering fat to blur the hard edges. Their eyes were stern and concentrated on the matter in hand, and none of them smiled or uttered an unnecessary word. Tall John and Throat Slitter Mary led the way down in silence, the stiffness of their backs rejecting the possibility of questions. Random and Ruby and Storm stuck close together, as much for shared warmth as mutual support.
How the hell did they build all these tunnels and trenches in the first place?
Ruby scowled at the metal walls.
I can't see whoever the opposition was at the time agreeing to a truce while the rebels brought in digging equipment.
They probably used captured energy weapons to blast out the original tunnels, and then widened them over the years by hand. We're looking at the end result of decades of hard work, maybe longer.
Damn right, said Tall John without looking back at them. The original work happened so long ago that no one now even remembers the names of those involved. We've been building our tunnels for centuries, each generation adding what was needed at the time. We have to live underground. It's all that's left to us. In the old days, there were the military satellites with their tracking systems and weaponry. These days, there's the weather. And besides, the factory complex has its own forescreen. We've always known the only way past the screen was under it. The wolves knew it, too. That's why they have their own people digging tunnels, too.
But you're safe down here, aren't you?
They're safe, and then they're safe,
said Throat Slitter Mary.
Technos 3's other life forms live underground, too. They live in the deep down, where we rarely go, but they come up from time to time. And then we get to argue as to whose territory these tunnels are. We hunt them for food, and they hunt us for food. We win more often than not, and it helps weed out the weak. See those old stains on the floor? When we make a kill, we splash the beast's blood around to mark the territory. It keeps the bastards at bay for a while.
You mean they get up this far?
Oh, sure. In the spring, sometimes there's hardly room to move in here for fangs and claws and nasty dispositions.
Good. I could use some exercise.
Well, that explains the bloodstains. But what about the leg?
Tall John and Throat Slitter Mary stopped and looked back at him.
What leg?
Storm pointed silently, and they all looked up at the human leg, complete with trousers and boot, protruding from where the right-hand wall met the ceiling.
Taljon scowled.
Mason Elliott, this is your area. Where are you?
A short, stocky man, bundled in furs up to his chin, stepped out of a side tunnel, an ugly black cigar in one corner of his mouth.
No need to shout, I'm not deaf. All right, gracious leader, I'm here. What is it this time? Lost your keys again?
What is that leg doing there?
Holding up the ceiling. We had to rebuild part of the wall after the last bloodworm attack, and we were a bit pushed for time. We were short of materials, body was handy, and no one liked him much anyway. Give it a few weeks, and the bloodworms will break through again. We can always remove the body then.
By which time it'll be stinking to high heaven. I want that leg brought down now. Get an axe and hack it off. Move it.
Certainly, gracious leader of us all.
The short man squeezed the end of his cigar out with his fingers and put it behind his ear. He stood glaring up at the protruding leg as Taljon led his party past. Random brought up the rear and was perhaps the only one to hear the short man mutter,
"Now what am I going to use as a signpost?"
Taljon led them on through the tunnels. Random had a suspicion he was being taken by the scenic route, so he wouldn't be able to describe the way down to anyone else. Random approved. It showed a good grasp of basic security and a healthy dose of paranoia. Unfortunately, since Random passed through the madness maze, he couldn't get lost. He always knew where he was in relation to everything else. He didn't think he'd tell Taljon that, though. It would only upset him. Random padded amiably along, enjoying what scenery there was. The tunnels were comfortably broad, but the ceilings were low enough that everyone walked with protectively hunched shoulders. Random suspected that the tunnels had been deliberately designed that way, to hinder and disorient invading forces. Presumably, the rebels were used to them. Random found them a pain in the neck. More people appeared as the tunnel floors finally began to level out. They wore layers of leathers and furs, and they all carried their weapons at the ready. They studied the newcomers with cold, suspicious eyes, and did not respond to nods or smiles.
Your people always go armed. Surely you're in no danger this far down.
There's always danger. If not from sudden security attacks, then from the beasts that live below. We always have people listening, but they can't be everywhere. So we're always prepared. From childhood on, we're trained to be ready to fight for our lives at a moment's notice.
So where do you get to rest and relax?
We don't. We can relax when we're dead.
Ruby smiled at Random.
You'll bring me to the nicest places.
Random smiled, but concentrated on what he was going to say to the rebels when he finally got to where he was being taken. He had a strong feeling it wasn't going to make him very popular with the underground community, but it had to be said. He led too many armies into battle on the hot words of rhetoric and slanted truths, and seen them die without flinching, because he believed the cause was greater than the individual. He wasn't sure he believed that anymore. Either way, he was here to inspire them with the whole truth, not fast talking. Even if it was a truth, they might not want to hear.